DiscerningHearts.com presents Inside the Pages, insights from today's most compelling authors. I'm your host, Chris McGregor, and I'm delighted to be joined by Robert Riley, who was the music critic for Crisis Magazine for 16 years. He has written for High Fidelity, Musical America, Schwann Opus, and the American Record Guide. In his 25 years in government, he served in the office of the Secretary of Defense, the White House under President Ronald Reagan, and the U.S. Information Agency. He was the director of Voice of America. He has published widely on foreign policy, war of ideas, issues, and classical music. With Robert Riley, we go inside the pages of Surprised by Beauty, A Listener's Guide to the Recovery of Modern Music, published by Ignatius Press. Robert, thank you so much for joining me.
I'm delighted. Thank you.
Surprised by Beauty, A Listener's Guide to the Recovery of Modern Music is an absolute diamond. I hope so many people will rush out to get this book because this is absolutely wonderful. Thank you so much for bringing in this new edition.
Well, that's so kind of you to say that. What this is a guide to is beauty, and we need a guide because the beauty about which I talk was suppressed to a large degree during the 20th century and even in the early years of the 21st. And many listeners or music lovers or maybe former music lovers who were frightened out of the concert halls because of decades of cacophony don't know that almost underground, many composers remained faithful to their vocation to write beautiful music. And this book talks about these composers, draws attention to their work, is a CD guide to the music that's been recorded by them, and hopes to sort of tell the story of the other 20th century that was going on unbeknownst to many others. What's particularly poignant is some of these composers didn't live long enough to see the recovery of their music. But I do hear from family members of these composers who are delighted that attention is being called to the beautiful music they wrote. And the other thing is that we have contemporary composers today writing absolutely beautiful music, true to its vocation, which I would say in its highest calling is to make the transcendent perceptible. So some of the music about which I talk strives for and reaches the highest expressions of which art is capable, which means it's great music. And this is an attempt to help listeners find it.
Mm. And there really hasn't been a greater opportunity for us to be able to bring that beauty into our homes and through our cars, directly into our hearts, than in today's use of media. Because as you spoke of, we have CDs, but yet now we have the ability to go on streaming mobilities so that we can go on to, say, a Pandora, or you can go to an iTunes, and you can place the name of the composers that you've placed here and have the opportunity to hear them like you've never had before.
I couldn't agree with you more. We have at our disposal a wealth beyond the dreams of the greatest Renaissance princes in terms of their musical establishments. We're a touch away from being able to access these treasures. And we do have a couple pages in the book about how to use the internet or iPods to access this music, as well, of course, as the traditional CDs, which are also available of these works. So there's almost no excuse not to have this beauty in your home or your car. It's so accessible. It's extraordinary in that respect. I'm staggered when I look around my study or my home and I see what I have here. I have more than anyone could possibly have dreamt of 50 years ago. Mm-hmm. In terms of this beauty.
We really owe a debt, don't we, to people who brought us this back catalog, as it were, of composers. Like, I'm thinking of the music label Naxos that made it possible for us to get our hands on this.
This is Klaus Heymann, who is the German gentleman who founded Naxos Records, is both a business genius and an inspired lover of music who has brought what was obscure to light. And he's been able to do it and make money doing it, which is why he's been able to do more. He's been particularly inspired in restoring so much great American music to the catalog. I'll just give you a little example. There was an American composer, obviously of Italian parentage, Vittorio Giannini, who I would describe as a neo-romantic composer, whose Fourth Symphony and Piano Concerto were never performed again after their premiere until Naxos had them recorded. Now they're available, and the music is absolutely gorgeous. This is a great, great service to music lovers, particularly American music lovers. Just to give you a sense of the orientation of this kind of music and composer, I'd like to quote Giannini briefly. He said he was motivated by, quote, an unrelenting quest for the beautiful, with the humble hope that I may be privileged to achieve this goal, if only for one precious moment, and share this moment with my listeners, unquote. Well, he did. He had more than one precious moment, as anyone can hear if they listen to this music. I'll just say one other brief quote from Giannini. Quote, if you want to be an artist, you must realize that you must build and live in an interior world of beauty and dedication to your art and service to God, unquote. So there you have it. That's the vocation of this composer and of many of the composers who are included in this book. And as you just mentioned, we have more available to us today than at any time of history. And if anything, I and my contributing author, Jens Larsen, a brilliant young German music critic, are kicking ourselves because we didn't have room to include many more composers than we do, and we have more than 80 in this book. There is such a fund of beauty, and there are more rediscoveries that have taken place, and maybe there'll be a new edition someday of Surprised by Beauty, which, if we find a publisher that's brave enough to do a book today that's more than the 500 pages that this book is, you know, we'll try to do that. I don't mean to intimidate any of your listeners by the length of this book, because it is a guide, and there are many chapters on individual composers, and it includes a discography of the recorded music that's available, and critiques of the recordings of the compositions and where you might start listening.
Well, we're talking with Robert Riley about his book, Surprised by Beauty. And I'm so thankful that Ignatius Press brought this book forward, especially in this particular edition. But what I love about it, Robert, is that we've had the opportunity, thanks to television, as it were, the medium, to be able to go and examine great art. There have been many wonderful programs that have been able to go in, whether it's even what Bishop Barron has done, but also Sister Wendy and a number of other people, to be able to go in and take a look at the art, and then you know the life of the artist, whether it's Michelangelo or Raphael or maybe even Caravaggio. They examine and they show us the beauty and the awesomeness in those paintings, in those works of art. But we haven't really had that when it comes to music. And music is what soars the heart upward, doesn't it?
Absolutely, it does. And, of course, there's a great deal available, not just on CD, but DVDs. To give you an example, I have one chapter in this book about Morten Lauritsen, who mm-hmm. is the most frequently performed American choral composer today, whose gorgeous music includes Lux Aeterna and many others inspired by his deep faith. A documentary was made about Morten called Shining Night. I actually participated in one little bit of it, but this gorgeous documentary traces Morten's inspiration from the natural beauty in which he with which he's surrounded in Puget Sound in Washington, and of course talks to him, includes snippets of performances of his great music. So you have available something like Shining Night on DVD or downloaded on your computer, mm-hmm. in which you can both see and hear. And as you point out, that's another great, great treasure.
And one of the artists here that I'm so glad that you covered, the story of Francis Poulenc.
Oh, isn't that beautiful?
Oh, my gosh. I mean, please introduce people to him.
Well, Francis Poulenc was a French composer of the mid-20th century, who was, let us say, tweaking the noses of the French music-loving public with satiric music and nonsense, kind of a playboy of music. And his best friend met his death in an unfortunate auto accident, and this threw Poulenc into a crisis, which brought him back to his faith. And after the recovery of his faith, this extraordinary music poured forth from him, to include one of the most beautiful Stabat Maters ever written, one that I listen to every Good Friday, every year, an exquisite mass, a glorious, appropriately enough, Gloria, as well as other absolutely beautiful music, piano concertos, divertimenti, a great deal of choral music, a good deal of it religious. And it's infected with joy. Of course, it deals directly with sadness and loss, but also with hope. So Poulenc wrote one of the great operas of the 20th century called The Dialogue of the Carmelites, mm-hmm. which is based on the true story of Carmelite nuns who were executed by the guillotine in the French Revolution because they refused to abjure their faith. And this inspired Poulenc to write one of the great operas. So this is another one of those treats. Here's an example of how accessible this is. I unfortunately occasionally loan out my CDs, and not surprisingly, often I don't get them back. Mm-hmm. So I was missing some of my Poulenc. And there on the internet, whether it was Amazon or some other source, was all of Poulenc's music on 16, 18 CDs from the original EMI recordings for a little over $1 a CD.
Mm-hmm.
So there it is.
How about that? People who don't think they'd love opera, you have to give yourself the opportunity to experience the Dialogue of the Carmelites, because that ending alone is one of the most extraordinary, most moving moments I've ever experienced in
Isn't
music,
that
period.
Riveting?
Oh, my gosh.
It's so riveting. And also, of course, it is what the nuns were praying mm-hmm. and singing as they went to the guillotine.
Salve Regina.
And Poulenc sets that so beautifully and dramatically at the end of the opera. It's one of the few instances in the opera where you have orchestral tutti, that means all of the instruments playing together at one time. So there it is. I'd like to give you another example of a contemporary composer, if I may.
Sure.
because I'm regularly in touch with him, and that is John Kinsella.
Hmm.
He's an Irish composer. John is about 83 years old now, remains extremely active. He just finished his 11th symphony. I was introduced to his works by a friend in London, and I couldn't believe music of this quality and inspiration had been overlooked. And how likely was it, I thought, that there is a great Irish symphonist today? And then I began listening to his music, and I was absolutely bowled over by its power, its level of inspiration, which he draws from, I'd say, Berlioz in terms of the brilliance of the orchestration, and from Sibelius and Bruckner in terms of his orchestral arguments, how he develops his music. Absolutely riveting, riveting, great music, and I'm privileged to have had the opportunity to write a chapter about John Kinsella's music and to help draw attention to this man's achievement. And of his 11 symphonies, more than half are available on recordings now, and they're absolute treasures. They're treasures. They're, as I say at the end of my chapter, does Ireland know the treasure it has in this man's music? It should tell the world. And that's the object of my writing, is to call attention to and to help these composers gain some exposure. And nothing touches me more than their expressions of gratitude for my doing this. You know, I'm just, these are great composers. Mm-hmm. I'm just a little music lover down here pointing to them and saying, listen to this. I mean, your soul is hungry for beauty. Here it is. Open your ears and feed.
We'll return to Inside the Pages in just a moment. Hi, this is Chris McGregor of Discerning Hearts, which is a 501c3 fully tax-deductible nonprofit organization dedicated to evangelization and spiritual formation through the use of new media. Discerning Hearts creates engaging multimedia specializing in podcasts and radio broadcasts, faithful to the teachings of the Roman Catholic Church and its rich, authentic spiritual tradition. We hope that if this has been helpful for you, that you will first pray for our mission, and if you feel us worthy, please consider a charitable donation, which is fully tax deductible, to support our efforts. We charge nothing for any of the programs that are available on Discerning Hearts, and our outreach is literally to the world. Please tell a friend about Discerning Hearts and either download our free apps, which are available at iTunes and Google Play stores, or visit discerninghearts.com. Now we return to Inside the Pages. We're talking with Robert Riley about his book, Surprised by Beauty. And Robert, don't you think, I know at least from my own personal experience, I come from a generation having been born in 1961, my overall experience of classical music, it came from the soundtracks of movies. You know, I don't think we appreciate that some of the great composers of the 20th century, they were not necessarily heard in concert halls because of an opposition we'll talk about in a few minutes. So much of what they were able to express, they ended up doing film, like Eric Korngold. That was a way for them to be able to try to give some kind of that, what you spoke of, beauty through that musical expression.
Well, it was a means for them to stay alive, too, so they could make a living and continue writing their orchestral or chamber music. And their film music is great. I mean, there's hardly anyone greater than Korngold, whom you just mentioned. My own experience was precisely through film music, when as a kid I saw War and Peace,
mm.
with Henry Fonda and Audrey Hepburn. Great, great movie with a great score written by the Italian composer Nina Rota.
Mm-hmm.
And I was so entranced by the waltz that he wrote in the great ballroom scene. It is the first LP I ever bought in my life. Mm-hmm. And I would listen and listen to Nina Rota's score. And, of course, it was many, many years later that I discovered all the classical compositions he had written. And this is true of other film composers, particularly Korngold, whom you mentioned, but also of the great American film composer Bernard Herrmann,
mm-hmm.
who wrote wonderful film scores for many Alfred Hitchcock movies.
Mm-hmm.
And he also wrote a symphony. He wrote an opera on Wuthering Heights. He wrote some marvelous chamber music. I think it film music can continue to be a path to the more substantial classical music that many of these composers wrote. Another great example is Malcolm Arnold,
mm-hmm.
the great English composer. Malcolm Arnold was one of the most fluent film composers of the 20th century. He wrote the score. Many people will recognize the score to The Bridge Over the River Kwai with Alec Guinness. And Arnold wrote the score to that movie in 15 days.
Wow.
And I think he got the Academy Award that year for that score. I'd have to double-check that. But, of course, Arnold was a great symphonist. He wrote many concertos. He wrote a huge amount of chamber music that's almost Mozartian in its quality. So we cover all of the subjects that we've just mentioned in the book.
It's so important for us to be able to talk about this, particularly in the context of that a theology of beauty, as you spoke of it, that calling of the sacred that just soars our hearts up, or even it goes into the depths of the abyss of our misery and tries to pull us into that transcendence, as you said.
I think you're absolutely right, and that's a beautiful term you used, a theology of beauty. And what was the theology of ugliness that dominated so much of the 20th century?
Mm-hmm.
One of the most popular American composers today is John Adams. And he spoke of his education in which he said, we learned that tonality died, that is, tonal development in music, around the same time that Nietzsche's God died. So the denial of tonality, of melody, of harmony in music was tied to Nietzsche's death of God. If the source of beauty no longer exists, why would the vocation of music be to express something that isn't there? So the single greatest crisis of the 20th century was the loss of faith. And noise and its acceptance as music was the product of the resulting spiritual confusion. It's how ugliness became a norm, and it's what drove a couple generations of people out of the concert halls, you know?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Why would they allow themselves to be inflicted with this ugliness which is presented to them as some kind of good? Or why must they accept noise as music? Arnold Schoenberg, the German composer, was responsible for this movement in which the existence of tonality was denied. And he said something that is absolutely chilling. And he said he declared himself, and I'm quoting, cured of the delusion that the artist's aim is to create beauty.
Mm.
cured of the delusion that the artist's aim is to create beauty, unquote. Well, that's sort of defacing God,
mm-hmm.
in a way. If beauty is gone, so too must be the presence behind it, the source of that beauty in God. So that's very distressing, but if you want a theology or an anti-theology behind that, I think that we can locate it there.
Mm-hmm.
And this loss of faith was responsible for the proliferation of noise, I think the recovery, a spiritual recovery, is the source of the return of beauty, and it also was the source of inspiration which kept the composers about whom I talk, who were neglected or suppressed in the 20th century, it's what kept them going. You know, despite all the odds, despite the fact that the concert system was against them, the grant awarding system was against them, the academy was against them, with little hope for performance, they nonetheless soldiered on.
Mm-hmm.
They wrote for the desk, as they would put it, you know. And that's all over now. The side of ugliness as a norm lost decisively. It's over. The side of beauty has won, and this beauty is pouring out of our contemporary composers.
Hallelujah.
Isn't that? And, you know, much of it is hallelujah. I was recently listening to the Canticle to the Sun by contemporary American composer Ken Fuchs. Again, Naxos has released several CDs of his music. And, of course, the reference in Canticle to the Sun is St. Francis.
Mm-hmm.
But here's a work, again, of beauty and celebration. It's for French horn and orchestra, concerto for French horn and orchestra. And Fuchs calls the French horn part the celebrant in this.
Mm-hmm.
And it's kind of an alleluia piece. I talk about Edmund Rubbra's Fifth Symphony, which he wrote, I think it's the first work he wrote after converting to Catholicism. It is a profoundly moving piece of music, obviously reflecting a spiritual journey that ends in these great fanfares, which he called akin to alleluias. It was sort of his Alleluia symphony. So this is what people who hunger for beauty need to know about, that it's there in abundance, that it's available, and I hope they listen.
It's never been better time, as we spoke earlier, for those who are trying to tap into that ability of music to elevate us and to bring us into a different state through this touching of beauty, into the transcendence. You bring forward for us, originally began steeped in that Schoenberg type of minimalism, if I'm phrasing that properly, but yet could not be contained there.
Well, you're absolutely right. I mean, this is true, actually, of many, many of the composers whose music I cover in this book. Because they were educated in the 20th century in the musical conservatories, they were trained and indoctrinated in Schoenberg's style of composition, which is called 12-tone,
mm-hmm.
which forbids audible harmonies in music, and therefore any melody. They were, for the most part, most of these composers were trained in that way, and they began composing in that way. And then they turned against it. And I tell the story in the book of how that happened in a number of composers' lives. One of the key composers in the United States was George Rochberg, who became a friend of mine. First of all, he was a hero to me because of what he had done, and later I got to know him. He lost his son, his teenage son, to cancer, which was a devastating blow for him. He had been the premier avant-garde composer in the United States as a practitioner of Schoenberg's 12-tone system of composition. This horrible experience he went through revealed to him the kind of bankruptcy of this style of composition, which dominated the music scene at the time. And he needed to return to tonality to express the grief, the sources of consolation, and his ferocious desire for beauty. So he began writing tonal music, and it caused a scandal in the music world and in the academy. And he was called all kinds of names, accused of all kinds of things. One arch composer told his wife, "What's George writing beautiful music for? That's already been done."
Mm. Oh, my.
And, you know, the arrogance in a remark like that.
Mm-hmm.
But Rochberg continued on writing these gorgeous string quartets, extremely powerful symphonies. And he, more than any other individual in the United States, made it possible for others to return to this kind of tonal, beautiful music. And he was an inspiration, and some of the other younger composers refer to Rochberg as an inspiration for them. Some of them were his students.
Mm-hmm.
So that you find some turning of the soul. John Adams said it takes a very powerful experience once you've been indoctrinated in this one way to turn from it and back to tonality. And amongst the younger composers, it was Adams who led the way. And of course, there's a chapter on his music here too. So there's a great drama contained in this book.
Mm-hmm.
It's not just a guide to the beautiful music. It also contains the story of the spiritual struggle and the spiritual journey involved in the proliferation of ugliness as a norm, and then the fight against it and the return to this kind of beauty that makes it sort of safe to write beautiful music again.
Yeah.
And I have in the book quotes from my conversations or correspondence with composers when they discuss the difficulties through which they went.
Mm-hmm.
To do this, and what they suffered, and what, thanks to others like Rochberg, they're now able to do in an uninhibited way. I had a wonderful conversations with a Swiss composer, Karl Ruti. In fact, I visited him in his home in Switzerland. And Ruti has written a very powerful requiem. He's written an extremely exciting Missa Angelorum, other great choral music.
Mm-hmm.
And I asked him, how is it? He of course, was exposed to the same kind of musical indoctrination, but he rebelled against it. And I said, how is it that you could then go about writing the kind of music you have? And he referred to John Cage, the American composer, who, of course, was one of the people behind the happenings in the 60s, and he I have a chapter on Cage, which is not very favorable because I think he was a kind of mountebank. But what he did in one so-called concert was drop a grand piano from a helicopter onto a football field. Hmm. See, this was considered the performance. Mm-hmm. So Carl Ruti said, well, if John Cage can drop a grand piano from a helicopter, I can write tonal music. In other words, all bets are off. All bets are off. All constraints are off. And one benefit of Cage's absurdities is the freedom for Ruti to write his beautiful music. It's ironic, but that may have helped him.
Well, and I think that return to, Robert, that return to the sacred music experience as well, to be able to say this is specifically an expression of the sacred, but where they're trying to tap into something. And I'm thinking of Heinrich Jaroszky, Arvo Pärt, and even John Tavener, the Englishman. There's the opportunity for those who are seeking the sacred. A lot of times we want to go to Bach's Mass in B minor, or we want to, or we say we have to go to a Verdi or something like that to be able to experience sacred music. And yet we have those composers that have made that journey, and they are really, it would benefit us to experience what they have to offer, wouldn't it?
You're absolutely right, and I have a chapter, a sort of meditation on Goretzky, Pärt, and Tavener, and on what is contained in their music in the three very different ways in which these men write. But they clearly are striving to make the transcendent perceptible, and I think they succeed. Pärt has also a very moving Stabat Mater, and he uses very spare means by which to write this music. People called him a spiritual minimalist in the sense that he uses very spare but powerful means to do it. Tavener is much lusher, and in his choral and other music, it's also extremely beautiful. And Goretzky made this sensational symphony of sorrowful songs, the Symphony Number 3, mm-hmm. which is a reflection on the losses of World War II, and one of the texts comes from what was written on the wall of a Gestapo jail cell by a young girl, and it was a prayer to Mary. Mm. And Goretzky sets this text in his Symphony of Sorrowful Songs, and it's one of the most heartbreaking things I have ever heard, this lament. And extraordinarily, when a recording of this came out in the United States from the Nonesuch label in the 1986, 87, it sold 700,000 copies, mm-hmm. unheard of in the classical music world. And since then, of course, more than a million of just this one recording. There have been multiple recordings of this symphony. I remember when Goretzky came to Washington, they tried to treat him like a rock star because of the success of his music. So he's surrounded by a gaggle of reporters shouting questions to him. And the first thing he said is, let's be quiet. Mm. And what you find in the music of these three composers is a sense of spiritual stillness in the presence of God. That's what they capture. And it's profoundly moving. And I couldn't recommend it more highly. I'll give you another example, if I may.
Oh, please do.
I spoke of Morten Lauritsen. Mm-hmm. most popular, frequently performed American choral composer today. And I want to let you know of how he spoke of his sublime choral work, O Magnum Mysterium. Now, here's what Morton said, quote, in composing music to these inspirational words about Christ's birth and the veneration of the Virgin Mary, I sought to impart a transforming spiritual experience within what I call a quiet song of profound inner joy. I wanted this piece to resonate immediately and deeply into the core of the listener, to illumine through sound. Unquote. Now, that's what he achieves. I think his expression of what he tries to do there, this vocational expression, captures so beautifully the drive for beauty and what that beauty expresses spiritually. Isn't that something?
Oh, it's just an incredible door that has been opened for us, particularly as we've said before, because of today's technology, to be able to get access to this. And it, I mean, it's just a treasure trove for us.
And you know, here is in so many ways, our culture, our popular culture, is degenerate, and there's plenty to be depressed about. But people need to know that there's a renaissance going on in American music. That is a tremendous sign of hope. And there in the heart of Los Angeles is Morton Lauritsen, mm-hmm. writing Ave Maria and O Magnum Mysterium and Lux Aeterna. You can tell I'm driven to try to get people to listen to this, to not miss the experience of this kind of beauty.
Well, if you don't mind me bringing up, you know, some of those Brits too, that even in the last century, I have to. One of my favorites is Edward Elgar's Dream of Garancias.
Yeah, I couldn't agree with you more. Elgar's music is profoundly moving, and the dream of Garantius is based on Cardinal Newman's poem, and he takes the listener through the experience of death and that profound moment of the soul meeting its maker. And it is one of the most powerful and moving things in all of music. And, of course, his other music, his two symphonies, his great, great, great cello concerto, all of this is spiritually expressive. And, of course, I sneak Elgar in there. He's early 20th century.
Mm-hmm.
But he deserves to be there because of the greatness of what he achieved. And I would hate to not direct people to that sublime music.
I feel like I'm being forced to make some Sophie's choices here in discussing different composers with you, because each one of the 80 that you brought forward, every one of them is extraordinary, and so many of us have no clue.
You know, the other thing I'd like to mention is a lot of this music is fun.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. You know, a lot of it is spirited and joyful, and we don't want to leave anyone with the impression that this is all so exalted that, it's not accessible or it's not filled with the more ordinary joys and trials of life, because it is. And it expresses those as well. It's the fullness of life, you see, so it includes everything.
And why not allow that to be the soundtrack of your life instead of allowing the mundane.
Is it? I love that line that you just used. We maybe that should be used in the promotion of this book, is make this the soundtrack of your life.
Mm-hmm. How wonderful. Robert
this
Riley,
beauty.
I wish we had more time. Any final thoughts?
I think it's a privilege to have come to know the great beauty of our time, the great beauty of much of the 20th century, that is unknown, that is only now surfacing, that is only now available. And it is my hope that this guide to that beauty helps enrich the life of some of your listeners.
I just thank you so very much, sir, for taking time out of your busy day to help open that door for us.
Well, thank you for having me.
This concludes our conversation with Robert Riley, going inside the pages of Surprised by Beauty, A Listener's Guide to the Recovery of Modern Music. To learn more about this book or to obtain a copy, go to Ignatius.com, the website for its publisher, Ignatius Press, or you can find it at any fine Catholic bookstore. To hear and or to download this conversation along with many others, go to discerninghearts.com. This has been a production of discerninghearts.com. I'm your host, Chris McGregor. Join me next time for Inside the Pages, Insights from Today's Most Compelling Authors.